always this easy. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But sometimes it is. So, do you think you should have beliefs that hinder you and make it harder to win the game of life? Do you think you should just accept what was given to you, what you were born into? Or should you have beliefs that will both propel you forward in terms of your actions and your results, but also in terms of your inner state of mind? So I want you to start being more aware of your beliefs, more conscious. When you act a way that maybe isn't ideal, take a moment and think about it. Why did you do or avoid doing that thing? What would a person, okay, what would a person have to believe in order to act that way? Sometimes it's a little bit easier to think objectively about things if we imagine this a make-believe individual, right? Just a person, not us, right? Because we're so caught up in ourselves, and most people have a tendency to not want to admit imperfections in themselves. And they might start making up excuses, or they'll bring up their life story and, oh, well, this happened to me, and then that happened to me, and then this happened to me, right? But just make it impersonal. Think about it like a puzzle, all right? You've got a couple pieces, and you need to fill in the blanks. So you just make this make-believe person who did this action, okay? This make-believe person is self-sabotaging his business. Right? Or maybe he isn't going to the gym. He's not working out. Or maybe he cheated on his girlfriend. What would that make-believe person have to believe in order to do that thing? And here's the thing. Our beliefs is what determines which questions we ask ourselves, and therefore influences our focus. So, for example, if you were brought up to believe that the way to determine whether you were successful or not successful was by comparing yourself to others, what types of questions do you think you would ask yourself? Well, you'd look around to your friends and family and neighbors and compare yourself to these people. Isn't this, after all, what most people do? Isn't this why you can have a drug dealer in the ghetto who feels successful because he has more money than all the other people who don't have any money? And the opposite happens too. I remember a couple of years ago, I was watching a TV show with my mom called The Real Housewives of Orange County. It's already an old show. I don't know when you're listening to this. If you're unfamiliar, don't worry. It's not really something that's worth watching. No offense to that show. It's basically a show where there's like a bunch of rich housewives who sit around all day and do nothing, and they go around and compare themselves to other rich housewives who sit around and do nothing all day. And I remember in one episode, one of the lesser wealthy housewives who was married, you know, to some guy who is only worth a couple million bucks instead of like tens of millions of dollars, was complaining to her husband about, you know, oh, well, the other housewives have bigger mansions and they've got more expensive cars and blah, 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 blah. Now, to most outsiders, this is pretty outrageous, right? But this is how most people operate. They compare themselves to their immediate surroundings. So if that's the way that you were brought up, and you believe that you aren't doing well if the others in your immediate surroundings are doing better than you, right? That makes you unsuccessful. Then what types of questions are you going to be asking yourself? Well, pretty much the same types of questions that housewife was asking. Well, who's got better cars? You look around the neighborhood. Oh, that person's got the new Mercedes, or that person's got the new Tesla, right? Who has a better house? Oh, well, we've got one story. They've got two stories, or we're on the 19th floor and they're on the 22nd floor. You know, who can throw the more expensive parties or go on the more lavish vacations? Alright? Now, if the answer to these questions is negative, meaning you're not in quite as good of a financial situation as your neighbors are, then that means you're going to be focusing on the negative. And what happens when you focus on the negative? It puts you in a poor state. Are you going to live a higher quality or lower quality life if you're in a poor state? Poor beliefs lead to poor questions, which leads to poor focus, which leads to a poor state. And that leads, my friends, to a poor quality life. So beware of your beliefs. I mean, just look at the destructive powers that some poor beliefs will have. I mean, can you think of how destructive a belief like "I'm not good enough" would have? I mean, it sounds a little silly to have a "I believe I'm not good enough," but don't you know people who are very insecure? Don't you know people who aren't confident in themselves and they don't believe in themselves? It sounds silly to say it that way, but this is a little bit more pervasive than you might realize. Or if you were to lose someone, and you were to say, "Well, you know, that person had more money," or "that person was smarter," or "they had a better team," or "he has better genetics," or "he has a better education." Are those beliefs going to lead to some maybe not so empowering questions? Or what if maybe your significant other left you and you said, "Oh, I knew that was coming. I mean, she was just too good for me." Or maybe you say, I know, I'm not good looking enough for her." Or how about this? "I knew she always wanted to be with a guy who had more money than me." See, if those are your beliefs, I mean, where is that going to lead your focus? If you believe that she left you because you're overweight, do you think that you can probably find a few examples in your own mind that will validate this? I'm not saying this is true or untrue, but I'm saying, can your brain put little puzzle, you know, pieces of the puzzle together, whether that existed in reality or not? But can your brain make it a reality? You bet it does. But does that make it true? We have to be careful, don't we? Or we'll place ourselves in a self-fulfilling cycle. So, take this program for example. All right, we're wrapping up week one, and that's an accomplishment. You should be proud of yourself. Congratulations. But there's going to be a whole range of people here, a whole range of opinions out there. Some people will believe that if their whole life hasn't changed in 1 week, then it doesn't work. It's bullcrap, done work. And there are other people who will have maybe made one small change in one area of their life, or who took one small action that they maybe otherwise would not have taken, and they will be completely thrilled and excited and ready for week two. Now, what beliefs would those two people have to have? It's the exact same program. They may have even experienced the same thing. Maybe they both took one or two small actions, right? Same program. There's the same input. There was even the same output. They both had one or two small changes. But what are the beliefs that they need to have to interpret this differently? Well, the person who did not see or did not perceive a huge change in 1 week is probably a person who believes that things happen to them. They believe that they are a victim of circumstance. They'll believe the program doesn't work because it did not change them. Rarely will you see one of these people say, "I wasn't willing to change." Then take the person who made that same one or two small changes, but they're absolutely pumped about the program. What does that person believe? Well, that person likely believes if he or she can make one change, then they'll extrapolate that out. And they'll say, well, if I can change this about myself, then I can change virtually anything about themselves. Or they'll extrapolate out, maybe not horizontally, but they'll extrapolate vertically. They'll say, hey, well, if I can make this one change in this 1 week, then that means next week I can make an even greater change in this area, within a month, within a year, and in a decade. I mean, dude, the level of change is almost something that you can't even imagine at this point. So you need to be aware of your beliefs. And that's what your goal is for today, to become aware of some of your fundamental beliefs in a couple important areas of your life, okay? Not the only important areas of your life, but just a couple. Here are four areas that I want you to think about your beliefs in. Now, I want you to think of at least one positive and one negative belief you hold in each of these four areas. Some of you may want to do a little bit more, and that's awesome. Go for it. I love people who want to do more than the minimum amount necessary. Or if you want to add on a couple more areas, right? So whether you want to do more than one each, or you want to do more than 4 hour areas, hey, cool. All right. You want to add on your family or school or spirituality, whatever it is, go ahead. Awesome. Okay. But I need you to at least do this. One positive and one negative belief for these four areas. Here they are. Number one, money. One positive and one negative belief that you have about either earning money or having money. Number two, exercise, the gym, anything related to your body. Okay, these are broad areas. So it can be a belief that you hold about going to the gym, or it can be something in relation to your ability to get, you know, to the shape you want to be in, that general area. Number three, your love life. Being in or getting into an intimate relationship. Number four, work/career. This can also be your side passion, so your day job or your side passion. One positive, one negative. Okay, so I want you to kind of, you know, if you haven't written those down, obviously you can come back, but if you want to write them down real quick, okay, here they are one more time. Money, exercise, love life, work. All right, money, exercise, love life, work. All right, so guys, that's your assignment today. Become aware of some of your positive and negative beliefs about money, exercise, relationships, work, and then that's the fun part. All right, then I want you to go out and I want you to absolutely destroy the rest of the day. Kick ass, kick butt. Today is day seven. It's day seven. I want you to round out your week strong. Accomplish something big today. So next week, you can look back on this week as a reference point for your ability to succeed. Hey guys, listen, you've accomplished. You have completed. You're done. You did it. Week one of your 30-day program. Guys, congratulations. I am proud of you for getting this far. This is further than the majority of people who purchase this program will get. Most people, right, there's people who are going to buy this and they literally won't even turn it on. There are people. I'm assuming that you're listening to this, but I'm also releasing this in a written form. Dude, there's people there, they'll buy a book, they'll buy an audio program, and they won't even open the book. It sits on a bookshelf. Or they'll purchase an audio program, and they'll never even listen to it. OK, Okay, there's other people, they'll do day one, they're like, oh God, he's making me do stuff, no, I don't want, this isn't for me. I don't want to do stuff, I just want to passively listen and think my life's going to change. Look, if you want your life to change, you need to actually be willing to change, right? You have to be willing to do action. Listen, guys, the truth of the matter is, a lot of these little assignments, okay, whether it's the assignment I make you do, or I say, hey, go out and just kind of do something today, just accomplish something, the little somethings, a lot of the significance in that is just you telling yourself that you're going to do something, and then you actually go out and do it. It doesn't matter if it's, hey, write one thing positive and one negative, and then you actually go and follow through with it. Okay, or I could say something else. Hey, go out and do this one thing, write down two actions you want to take and go do it. And then you go do it. That's what's really important. Okay, it's your brain trusting yourself. It's believing in yourself. Okay, when you say you're going to do something, you actually go out and do it. There are so many people who every year, on January 1st or December 31st, they write, you know, they'll sit down, oh, I'm gonna write my, I'm gonna write my New Year's resolution, I'm gonna become more fit, and I'm gonna stop smoking, I'm gonna finally get in a relationship, and by January 14th, like, none of that has happened. They're like, oh yeah, no, I give up, right? That's not gonna happen. Listen, you have to get in the habit of saying, I'm gonna do this, and then you start taking immediate action, and you follow through on what you say you're gonna do, alright? So, I want you to take this moment as an opportunity to practice a small win. You spent money on this program so you could better yourself, you got through the first week. To some people, that may not seem like a big deal, but you, if you did this properly, okay? Now, even if you didn't do it in a full week, even if you did it in a short period of time, as long as you're doing your exercises, that's the most important thing. So I want you to take this moment and actually appreciate what you have accomplished. Appreciate that you said that you set out to do something. You said, hey, A, I'm going to listen to this program. And B, you did the little exercises and you followed through with them. So practice that small win. All right, when that motivational music kicks in a moment, just take that moment to sit up straight or stand up straight. All right, stick that chest out, put the shoulders back, put the big grin on your face, the big smile, ear to ear. You got that Richard Branson thing going on. All right, throw your hands up in the air and say, yes, yes. All right, you did it. You won. And then when the music's done, okay, after you celebrate for a minute, do your assignment, okay, right? It's only going to take a couple minutes, all right? It'll take like 8 minutes, all right? It's not that big of a deal. Do your little assignment so you know your positive and negative associations to a couple major life areas. And then I want you to give out and I want you to kick ass today. Do not let today go to waste. You cannot control yesterday and you cannot control tomorrow, but you can control today. So make today a success and live by design. Cue the motivational music.
The Business of Money, Personal Finance and Investing for the 21st Century. Written by Knight, Writer. Narrated by Richard Banks. Are you ready to take your finances to the next level? Whether you are thousands in debt or have millions in the bank, the business of money will help you achieve your goals. How do you get out of debt? How do you differentiate between good debt and bad debt? How much do you need to be saving for retirement? Can you still rely on a pension plan? What are the preeminent investment opportunities today? What is the optimal investment strategy? The middle class is becoming a relic of the past. The gap between the haves and have-nots is wider than ever. Are you on the correct side? The Business of Money is a collection of summaries of the greatest books and programs ever released on money management and investing. By the time you finish this book, you will have a clear, concise, and detailed understanding of what you need to do to become financially free. I personally guarantee this book will help you achieve your financial dreams. If it does not, return the book for a full refund. The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. The Intelligent Investor is a classic, which offers timeless information on investing. Mr. Graham is a source you can trust. Graham was a man who created great wealth during the stock market crash in 1929. With a lifetime of experience, Graham lays out the complete path and strategy you need to know to become an ultra-successful investor in good times or bad. Are you interested in the stock market? Do you think you could create great wealth from investing? A lot of people have this thought. Yet more than not, these individuals are too fearful to take action. They think about bubbles, huge crashes, and recessions. However, you can invest in any market without putting yourself at risk of a total loss. This is called intelligent investing. Benjamin Graham first discussed intelligent investing in 1949. It involves a long-term approach, which focuses on minimizing risk. This strategy has been proven decade after decade to be extremely effective. It has been over half a century since Graham first introduced this new concept, and many investors have used it with great success to become multimillionaires. One investor you may have heard of who uses Graham's approach is none other than Warren Buffett. There is so much money made, but also so much lost in investing. The history of finance is complete with stories of great successes like Buffett, but also with stories of tremendous failure. The truth is, much more individuals will find themselves on the losing side. This begs the question, should you really risk your hard-earned income in the stock market? The short answer is yes, as long as you are adhering to the strategic principles put in place by Graham decades ago. With intelligent investing, you will use sophisticated analysis processes in order to minimize risk and produce a stable return on your money. You are not speculating on stocks, which is the focus on potentially large gains in the immediate future, with a significantly higher inherent risk of losing it all. Speculative investing is risky and should be avoided by most investors. One example of speculative investing is trading on rumors. You may hear some talk going around that Apple is about to release a new line of products, and you would then purchase stock in Apple based upon this information. You may get lucky and see a return on your investment, or you may get unlucky when it ends up no new line of products was released. Contrary to this, intelligent investing is concentrating on the value of the stock as it is right now, instead of hoping for and betting on an increase of value in the future. A value investor will purchase stock in a company when the intrinsic value is greater than that of the stock. This means the investor has determined the company to be worth more than the market is currently assessing its value. An intelligent investor will purchase a stock only when he believes the company is currently worth more than the value of its stock. Investing this way may not produce the overnight successes of more risky trading. But this is not the goal of intelligent investing. The goal is to earn money long-term in the safest way possible. Here are three principles which should be followed by all intelligent investors. 1. As an intelligent investor, you will study the long-term health prospects of the company. You must determine the company to be worth more in the long-term future before purchasing its stock. Your decision should take into account more than just numbers. A balance sheet is not the ultimate piece of information you base your decision off of. You need to look at the company itself and how well you believe it will perform over the next several years. You want to take a close look at management and their successes or failures in previous companies they were involved in. You want to take dividends into consideration too, as these will normally reduce your overall risk. Do not overvalue the most recent earnings report. Short-term earnings are an indicator. However, aim for a larger picture by looking at the company's earnings statements over the past several years. Follow step 1, and you will better able to determine if the company has an intrinsic value greater than that of its stock. One example where this may come into play is a company which had a poor performing quarter. The company's stock may decrease moderately and provide an opening for you to invest. If the long-term financials are positive and you believe in the management, this is likely a valuable opportunity. 2. Diversify your investment portfolio. Part of intelligent investing is minimizing risk. This means you should avoid putting all your eggs in one basket. You may find one company which you strongly believe will succeed, but no investment is guaranteed. Even if you believe the chance of failure to be small, you cannot take the risk. When you invest a large portion of your portfolio into one company, things only need to go wrong once, and you lose everything forever. We must prepare for the unlikely by diversifying. 3. You must understand and accept that intelligent investing will not create immense wealth overnight. Your goal as an intelligent investor is to do as well as you can without excessive risk. Your goal is not to make as much money in as little time as possible in spite of the risk. Do not compare yourself to stockbrokers. Chasing fast money creates greed, and greed clouds judgment. So let us pretend you are ready to invest in your first stock. What is the first thing you should do? Most people will say you should think of a company you like and look at its stock chart history. But these people would be incorrect. The first thing which should be done is to look at the stock market history as a whole. This insight will inform you the stock market is always fluctuating. Sometimes these rises and falls can be somewhat accurately predicted. However, often they cannot. In reality, if you make enough predictions, eventually you'll be right. So it is incorrect to truly say that there is any time in which you can accurately predict the market. There will be other times in which you will be just as certain, but things will not go as you expect. The one thing to remember is the stock market is unpredictable, and it is wise to expect fluctuations both in the market and in your stock. Monstrous crashes similar to the Great Depression are to be expected on occasion. Due to this certainty of uncertainty, you want to minimize the risk of a large hit. In order to do this, you want to diversify your portfolio among many sectors. You also want to prepare yourself mentally for a crisis. If you invest in the stock market for any significant period of time, it is all but guaranteed you will experience a major crash. You need to prepare and strategize for this beforehand so you do not make the incorrect decision in the heat of the moment. One important piece of information to keep in mind is no matter how bad it may be in the short term, every single market crash in history has fully recovered to date. That does not guarantee the same for the future. However, long-term trends tend to be correct more than short-term ones. Once you have accepted the fact the stock market fluctuates, it is now time to look into the history of each company you are interested in. You should examine the relationship between dividends, earnings, and stock performance over the past decade. Next, account for the inflation rate. For example, If the stock is rising at 3% per annum, but inflation is also at 3%, then the company is actually not netting any gain. 5 years from now, you may have more dollars. However, your money will be worth the same it was 5 years previous in regard to purchasing power. In contrast, if the stock has a history of 7% growth per annum and inflation is at 3%, you will have netted a 4% return on your investment. Determine if that net return is a number you are interested in and if it outweighs the risk. For the intelligent investor, a healthy understanding of stock history is a powerful weapon. Keep your knowledge up to date and in mind for optimal returns. Certain aspects of market behavior can be difficult to understand. It should be noted, the market is really just a collection of investors. Even more simplified, this means the market is merely a result of how people think. So, for a moment, let us think of the market as a person. Let's call the market Mr. Man. Mr. Man has a few personality issues which can make him difficult to handle. Mr. Man can be quite moody and sometimes have bipolar tendencies. Due to Mr. Man's mood swings, he is very difficult to predict. He may be walking in one direction and for no apparent reason turn and start walking somewhere else. Mr. Man may be manic one day and be sure things are going in the correct direction. The next day, he may experience a bout of depression or apathy. Mr. Man has quite a high regard for himself. He thinks he is intelligent and sophisticated. However, in reality, he is not that bright or clever. Mr. Man is a useful representation of the market because the market is nothing but the representation of the investor's alternating feelings of irrational optimism and overbearing fear. For you to be an intelligent investor, you need to detach your decisions from your own personal emotional peaks and valleys. When you strip away the emotion, you will understand a stock earning a large profit this quarter does not necessarily result in the company generating long-term profit for you. Paradoxically, these high-flying stocks are more likely to have a quick and significant decline in their performance for that exact reason. When a stock is hot, lots of investors will jump on pushing the stock higher and higher, making it appear more and more desirable to the untrained eye. However, once all the momentum investors have jumped on the bandwagon, the stock will see a disastrous fall, as there are no new investors to drive the stock higher. At this point, the investors begin selling, which in turn creates a panic, resulting in even more selling. Despite intellectually understanding this, many investors find it difficult to resist the urge to ride the wave. Human beings as a species have evolved into expert pattern recognition machines. People are so good at finding patterns, they will even invent them where none exist. Constellations are a prime example. Humans looked up into the heavens and observed what in reality is a random distribution of galaxies and stars. However, what they saw were outlines of gods and animals. If humans can gaze at a blob of dots and find meaning, just imagine what we will find when we stare at an assortment of dots on a chart, stretching higher and higher. It's going up! Most investors will be blinded by the strong pattern recognition software in their head. All he will see is a stock rising higher and higher. All intelligent investors work hard to mitigate risk. However, there is more than one type of intelligent investor. Are you an enterprising investor or a defensive investor? First, let us look at a defensive investor. The defensive investor has an even stronger adversity to risk than a typical intelligent investor. Therefore, the defensive investor is willing to accept lower returns in order to improve the probability of conserving his initial investment. In order to secure this heightened level of safety, the defensive investor must be strict and strategic with diversification. The defensive investor will hold a higher percentage of high-grade government debt securities. The defensive investor will generally have between 50 and 75% of his investments held in high-grade debt securities. The majority of the remaining capital will be invested in the stock market, with the last small portion invested in gold. Bonds are attractive to defensive investors because they are safer than stocks. You are less likely to lose your initial capital in a high-quality bond. However, you will only realize a small return. In some situations, this return is so low it can be less than inflation, which results in a net loss of buying power. Stocks are still used within reason to give the defensive investor an ability to substantially increase his net worth. However, stocks are more risky and therefore put you at a higher likelihood to lose some, if not all, of your investment. For this reason, it is still vital to be well diversified in your stock portfolio. For the defensive investor, it is preferable to invest in larger, well-established businesses which have a track record of success. Invest in at least 10 of these companies across multiple sectors in order to decrease the risk of total or substantial loss. This level of diversification may seem somewhat intimidating at first, but you do not need to worry, as you can apply the simplicity of choice. When investing, do not attempt to start from scratch. You do not need to figure everything out yourself. One quick way to get on the right path is to look at and replicate the portfolios of successful investment funds. Be sure to avoid purchases which were recently made, as these may be short-term bets. Instead, look for the companies which have been held for many years, but have not experienced a significant raise in value since the purchase was initiated. Also, when starting out, it is vital to ask the opinions of experts. These individuals understand the stock market and will be able to help you in maximizing your potential growth while minimizing your risk of loss. By following the steps stated here, you will be on your way to great long-term success in investing. How to Make Your Money Last by Jane Quinn. How to Make Your Money Last is both a guide for recent retirees as well as valuable information for how working individuals can manage their money better and how to provide more income for themselves in later years. Retirement, whether it be due to desire to no longer work or an inability to work, is a massive change in one's life. You want to prepare mentally and financially before it's too late. Retirement can either be an extended vacation and period of freedom or a constricting prison, depending largely upon your financial preparedness. One day you are a contributing member of society with a purpose. The next day, you have too much time and not enough to do. What is the first thing you should do once retired? First of all, if you feel lost or depressed, realize you are not alone. The majority of new retirees experience a sense of lost purpose or depression initially. Fortunately, there are steps you can take to minimize both the probability and intensity of this occurring. It is vital to care for your health both before and during retirement. Staying healthy and active will decrease depression, increase energy, and allow you to work for several more years. This will allow you to earn more money during your working years, which will then support you in retirement. If you are young, you may not be familiar with frequent trips to the doctor's office. However, sooner or later this will occur. The decrease in health and increase in surgeries and medications will result in quite hefty medical bills. While some of this may be covered by insurance, there are often unnecessary but useful procedures or medications which are not covered by insurance. Being able to afford these options would significantly improve the quality of your life. For instance, if a professional athlete injures his knee to a degree where he can still function and walk, but not perform at optimal levels, he will receive a knee surgery, which he or his employer pays for. On the other hand, if you are an average person who prefers jogging as your form of cardiovascular exercise, and you injure your knee but can still walk, your insurance will not cover the procedure. How hard you work to earn, save, and invest in your earlier years will determine whether or not you can afford that elective surgery. This will influence your health, and therefore your long-term well-being. In early age, it is easy to forget that one day we will grow old. One day our brains and body will not be able to keep up with an intense work schedule. Because of this, it is important to remember we need to earn more than what we need to survive. Getting by is great, but you are punishing yourself in the future. You need to earn enough now to support yourself in the future. It is also important to remember the cheapest health care is preventative health care. Again, at our young age, we may feel invincible, but that does not preclude a major issue from arising, which may take many years to come to fruition. If you wait, you will be seeing serious health ramifications. It may cost a bit more out of your pocket now to get screened. However, if you catch something early enough, it may save your life. Early in life, it is often considered acceptable to take larger risks financially. This may be starting a business or investing in riskier stocks. However, the closer you get to retirement, the more conservative you need to be with your investment strategy. If you are 5 or 10 years away from retirement, let alone in retirement, you simply cannot afford to lose all or a significant portion of your savings. For this reason, if you are decades away from retirement and have a desire to earn big money in the stock market or start a business, do so now. Old age creeps up on you sooner than you think. So do not waste your youth and opportunity for risk. Get a Financial Life by Beth Kobliner. Get a Financial Life is a comprehensive guide to money and how to manage it. This book will provide you with necessary information on debt, savings, and investments. Do you want to be a grown-up? Do you wake up and start working hard? Or do you wake up and start posting on Facebook about how adulting is so hard? Unlike in the past where young adults were forced by circumstances to start working, today's youth has little societal or circumstantial pressure to force them into work. Today, you have the complete freedom to dictate your life and your path. If you want to work, you can work. And if you do not want to work, you can accept government handouts or live with friends and family. Of course, your actions will determine your financial situation. Most of today's youth are graduating with tens of thousands of dollars in student debt. Your decisions will either fulfill your dreams of owning the car and house you want, or will fulfill the inevitability of avoiding phone calls because you know they are debt collectors. Regardless of your current situation, this book will show you the path to improving your finances. No need to fear. This process is easier than you think. Whether you are 18 years young or in your 50s, it is never too late to start handling your finances more responsibly. Here are the steps you need to take to get the ball rolling. First, how much money do you want? This is a common question with an answer which is generally no more than a guess. $100,000 in savings, $1 million in savings, an $80,000 annual income, or a $500,000 annual income. Numbers like these are common, but are you basing these numbers off your end goals, or are you merely picking numbers which sound nice? Most people aren't even taking taxes into consideration. If you want to net $100,000 a year, you need to make roughly double that. Instead, it is best to work backwards. What do you want? What are your goals, which are directly or indirectly related to financial wealth? Perhaps you have already achieved that and are looking to own a vacation home in Hawaii or buy a private jet. Whatever your goals are, you need to figure out how much they will cost. For example, you may want a jet which costs $8 million. The average person will then set their sights to attain this number. However, the actual cost of a jet far exceeds the purchase price. That $8 million jet may cost you around $1 million a year to maintain. So after 8 years of owning the jet, you have spent $16 million, not $8 million. On a smaller scale, most people only look at gas prices to determine the cost of travel in their car. However, the real cost of travel far exceeds this. After depreciation, maintenance, and repairs, you are paying many times more per mile than you thought. So step one is to gauge the true costs of your current desires. Once you have this information,
You can then figure out how much money you really need. This number may be far more or less than you anticipated. Now that you have your real target income, you can start saving. However, before you can save, you must know how to spend intelligently. Start keeping track of your monthly expenses. After about 3 months, you should get a relatively clear idea as to how much your average monthly expenditures are. The beautiful thing about tracking your expenses is it tends to be a self-correcting practice, meaning if you track your expenses long enough, you will begin to clearly see where you are spending more money than necessary. Be sure to keep track of recurring and automated expenses as well. Often we have so many payments coming out of our checking account or being charged to our credit card, we miss a few which we no longer need. This practice of tracking expenses is nearly certain to save you money, even with no other strategies put in place. Now, let us look at debt. Do you have debt? If you do, are you paying the minimum amount or close to it? Is your debt elimination strategy to avoid thinking about it? If so, you are not alone. Credit card debt is particularly dangerous because of its extremely high interest rates. Let us assume you have $3,500 of debt at 17% APR. Because life happens and you don't have a bunch of money laying around, you decide to pay only the minimum amount. Here is the crazy thing. In total, you will end up having paid $11,162. That is $7,662 in interest. Credit card debt is a vicious cycle low socioeconomic individuals will get trapped in. Do not allow yourself to be part of this demographic. Take care of your credit card debt as soon as possible. If you are serious about paying your loans off, try giving your lender a call. Your lender is used to borrowers defaulting on debt every day, and they lose money on that. Your lender wants you to succeed in continuing to pay your bill, so they may be willing to work with you by lowering the interest rate, or if you can pay off the majority, but not all of your loan, they may reduce your bill in exchange for you paying off the remaining balance in full. Not everyone wants to negotiate with the bank, and that is understandable. If this is the case with you, hire a nonprofit credit counselor, like those from the Association of Independent Consumer Credit Counseling Agencies, or the National Foundation for Consumer Credit. These counselors will negotiate with the lenders on your behalf, regardless of the means. If you have a way to pay off high-interest debt, do it. Here are a few more strategies to manage debt. If you do have savings or investment, use it to pay off high-interest debt. With few exceptions, the best average return you can get on your investment is paying down debt. If you are paying 24.99% APR on your credit card, you are earning a 24.99% return on your investment, and that is hard to beat. Low-interest loans like home loans do not need to be paid off immediately, as you may be able to find better returns on your money elsewhere. Another great strategy is debt transfer. Unfortunately, this option is less available to those who already have a history of not paying their debt, but it is still worth looking at to see if you qualify. If you hold debt on a credit card, which you believe you will not be paying off anytime soon, apply for credit cards with a 0% APR introductory rate, as well as a no-fee balance transfer option. If you are unable to qualify for these, continue to work your way through less desirable cards until you reach cards that are no better than your current option. For instance, if your current credit card comes with 22.99% APR, and you have no funds to pay that off, and you qualify for a card with, say, a 9-month 0% introductory APR with a 3% balance transfer fee, take it. Even though you must incur a 3% balance transfer fee, you will save money when compared to paying the higher interest rate. A secondary benefit to this is, it will free up additional money during the introductory interest-free period, which you can apply to pay off other debt. This extra money will go exclusively to principal, bypassing the excessive interest. After the introductory interest-free period ends, you will now have more money to pay off the initial balance because you have already reduced your monthly debt obligations elsewhere. It should be noted, you always want to pay debt on time. You may think now is not a good time, and you do not have money now, but delaying will only increase your debt obligations through fees and accrued interest. As bad as right now may feel, later is almost always worse. Another reason you want to make paying debt a priority is because if you do not pay your debt, you will be less qualified for loans in the future. This will create a vicious cycle where your next loan will come with an even higher interest rate, which will make it even harder for you to pay it off. In contrast, if you pay your debt obligations now, your credit worthiness will improve, allowing you to qualify for lower interest loans, which will be easier for you to pay off. Now let us look at banks, and which option is best for you. Most individuals do not put much thought into which company they bank with. They simply choose a location which is near to them, or join whichever bank their parents belong to. This may seem logical, but it is not necessarily the best decision-making criteria. First, make sure your bank is FDIC insured. Most large banks are, but smaller local banks or credit unions may not be covered. This protects your savings and is critical. However, the FDIC has a limit of $250,000 per bank. So if you have $700,000 in savings, you need to have three banks to have all your money covered. Another drawback to a smaller bank, which may be conveniently next door, is the lack of online banking. Having to go to a physical location regularly is a hassle and a waste of time. So be sure to join a bank with online banking. You also want to be sure the bank has a favorable ATM situation. Larger banks will have ATMs all over the country. Some smaller banks without many ATMs will provide you with a monthly credit to use other ones. Make sure this credit is large enough to cover all your ATM needs. Join a bank which offers a transaction notice sent to your phone via text or email. Some people will lose thousands of dollars over the course of several years from transactions which they are not aware of. If you do not regularly comb through your entire transaction history, you need to be alerted of each transaction. Getting immediate transaction notices sent to your phone will keep you up to date and informed on everything that happens to your money. This is also highly recommended for credit cards. Credit card fraud is real and common, and in a very short period of time, a scammer can run up thousands of dollars of fraudulent charges. With immediate notifications, you can stop the fraudulent activity at the very first transaction. Of course, once you are free of high-interest debt, you may not want your money simply sitting in a bank. You may want your money working for you by investing it. Investing can be as simple or complex as you would like to make it. But one thing will always hold true. You need to diversify. This single rule will help you avoid major losses and is the most important rule for you to follow. What is the easiest way to invest? Simple. An index fund or mutual fund. A fund is one single investment for you, but that fund will typically hold dozens, if not hundreds, of securities. It is a one-stop shop for diversification. This is also beneficial for those on a budget. If you only have $500 to invest, it is nearly impossible to properly diversify by purchasing individual stocks yourself. Plus, the transaction fees will not only eat up any earned money, but your initial capital as well. In contrast, investing in a fund will give you exposure, which is impossible to match with limited capital, and will also significantly reduce transaction fees. The potential for a significant drop in your investment is greatly diminished in a fund. So look at some mutual funds as well as index funds, and see which works best for you. Be aware that while mutual funds may sound good, they tend to have hidden fees which are not present in index funds. The One-Page Financial Plan by Carl Richards. The One-Page Financial Plan is your guide to effective budgeting. Learn why money is important to you personally and how to bring your financial dreams to fruition. Even if you are not obsessed with money, it likely crosses your mind relatively often. With rent, kids, car expenses, medical, dental, vacations, and things breaking down, most people think about money quite a bit. It is essential for you to have a financial plan which works for you and your needs. This book will demonstrate how you can create your own financial plan, which will both decrease stress and increase available cash. Before we talk about the specifics of your financial plan, we must first determine why you really want to be in an improved financial situation. Financial planning can be a lot of work, so if you do not have a strong reason for why you are doing it, you will more than likely eventually decide to stop following it. Take out a piece of paper and write your thoughts on this question. Why do you really want this money? Asking why will help you clarify what exactly you want and why you want it. This information will help you develop and stick to your financial plan. For example, someone whose primary desire is to travel the world in the next few years and someone who desires to secure their pension will have different purposes for saving, which will likely result in different financial planning. The world traveler may save up to invest in a worldwide vacation timeshare plan, whereas the latter individual will likely save to invest in retirement. Money ultimately cannot be taken with you, so you need to know why you want it, because this determines how much of it you will need and will also increase motivation. If you know why you want money, you will be more motivated to save. A financial plan should be flexible as life and situations change. Just like how free apps on the internet like WhatsApp and Skype have forced phone companies to lower their rates, there will be outside forces which increase or decrease the required money to accomplish your goals. For this reason, the first thing to do when considering a financial plan is to understand and accept it is impossible to predict the future. You can make educated guesses, but the universe may decide to go in a different direction. Once you have accepted this truth, it is time to think of and write down your goals. Your goals will be in part based upon why money is important to you. For instance, if you want money to better care for your children and give them the best opportunities available, here are a few related goals you could set. Within 3 years, I would like to have saved enough money to finance my children's studies. Next school year, I would like to save enough to be able to comfortably afford to send my daughter on her school's foreign exchange program. I would like to save 2 years' worth of estimated expenses for each of my children in case they are unable to attain a job immediately following college. These may originate as your goals, but you have the freedom to change them at any time for any reason. Having clear goals related to your purpose for earning and saving money is important. However, you also need to understand the financial situation you are in right now. Produce a list of assets and liabilities you hold. This will help clarify your current financial situation. Some individuals may not want to assess their financial situation because they know it is bad. However, if you do not understand your current situation, it will be significantly more difficult to improve it. No matter how things may be, ignoring it is never the correct choice. Create a balance sheet for yourself. Draw a line down the middle. On the left, list your assets. These will be items like savings, investments, and possessions, which you are willing to and are relatively easy to liquidate. A previous model phone which you keep as a backup, but could still sell on Craigslist for a few $100s, is an example. On the right side, list your liabilities. These are primarily regular or recurring bills such as mortgage, rent, car notes, and other various debt. When you subtract the total liabilities, not the monthly payments, from the assets, how much do you end up with? This is your net worth. Now that you have a clear list of your liabilities, it is time to prioritize them. Typically speaking, you want to look for the liability with the highest interest rate and pay that off first. While knowing exactly how bad a situation is may be difficult, now you can finally take control of your financial life and start improving it. Now you have a solid and simple financial plan set up. Next, we will look at spending and saving money better to create more dollars in your bank account or investment portfolio. A budget is a term often thrown around as meaning a cap to your expenses. However, a proper budget regarding financial planning is more than that. A proper budget will allocate the appropriate amount of capital to each expense. After